This is Burning Brightly, a podcast for Christian moms who are feeling called to build a business and share their light with the world. I'm Bonnie Wiscombe, a life coach, mom, and entrepreneur. And I'm honored to be your guide as you face this business building adventure full of highs, lows, and everything in between. This is where we help each other find the courage to shine.
Okay, welcome back, everybody. I am so excited to have a guest on the show. Her name is Colette Hall, and she is a gem. She is a coach just like me, and she has an amazing story and offers so much value for high-achieving entrepreneurs like you and like me. So welcome, Colette.
Thank you. It's so great to be here.
Yes, we want to start off by hearing just a little bit about you. So tell us about your life, your family, a little bit about your background.
Okay, so I am a coach, just like you mentioned. This is my third career. So any one of you who is thinking that maybe it's too late, it's not too late. It's not ever too late. I used to be a school teacher way back when, and then I was a graphic designer in the craft industry and owned a business in the crafting industry for a long time. And now I am a coach for high achievers. I have one son, he's 15 right now, and I'm also a widow. My husband passed away 5 years ago. And so that's part of my story as well.
Yeah, it is. And what a fascinating life you have led already. I love it. And I love that you were in the crafting space too. I don't think we talked about this before, but I was a sewing blogger for a long time. So I have a special place in my heart for crafts and anything creative. It's so fun.
Oh, yes. Same lane. Yeah. We're in the same lane.
So tell me just a little bit before we get into coaching, because those of us who are coaches know that very often it's like this long kind of meandering path to get to where we are, right? Like we have maybe like a trial or something that happens. And then all of a sudden, when we find the tools that coaching offers us, we're like, oh, this changes so much. Do you feel like that was the case for you going into coaching, that you were kind of led to it?
100% led to it. I believe that I've been led to all the different things that I have pursued. But this particularly, my husband had passed away. He was a quadriplegic in a wheelchair. He had broken his neck when he was 15 years old at Lake Powell. And we met at Brigham Young University when we were in college, got married. That was way back in 1992.
So yeah, back in the 1900s, as my kids say.
Right. And we were married for a long time. And so I was a caregiver. We also had a lot of help when it came to that. He was a motivational speaker, and there were all kinds of physical things that just came our way, you know, with his situation and different things that happen to your body when you are quadriplegic, plus different things that we experienced, you know, health-wise. And so I have a lot of understanding about what it's like to live with a disability and to care for somebody that has a disability and to kind of persevere through those things. And how do we want to live when we have challenging circumstances? And so Jason and I made deliberate choices about how we wanted to live our lives. You know, we were not interested in just enduring. We wanted to endure it well and endure it happily. And so we had some different, I guess, things in our toolkit that we used to help us live the very best life that we could. And so he was a motivational speaker. He would speak to corporations and companies, and we were kind of in this space anyway, motivation or, you know, positive thinking and stuff like that. So when he passed away unexpectedly, I actually had like one goal. This was about a year after he passed. And I had like one goal. I was just going to walk 15,000 steps a day. Like that was my goal.
That's a pretty good goal.
And care for my child, you know, like my son Coleman, he, you know, needed a driver and he needed food and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I was doing all of that, but I wasn't working at that time. I had stopped designing in the craft industry. I felt like I needed a break and I really wasn't pursuing anything other than, you know, I'm going to walk 15,000 steps a day. And so that actually takes quite a while every day to, you know, check that off the list. And as I was doing it, I was listening to podcasts or audiobooks or whatever. And I would walk around our neighborhood. I walked everywhere. Like people would say, gosh, I saw you three times, you know, walk by my house. I'm like, yep, you did. You did. But as I was kind of in that mode, I had two friends in the same week. They said, you know, you really remind me of this person that has a podcast. You sound like her. That's what they said. You sound like her, like your philosophy sounds like her. And it was Jodi Moore. Mm. It was Jodi Moore. And so that was the first time I had heard of Jodi Moore. And I started listening to her podcast. And I kind of, you know, in all this time, I had lots of chances to go back and listen to all the podcast episodes. And as she was talking about some of these life coaching principles, it really resonated because it was like, okay, this is how we've lived our lives. Me and Jason, this is how we've chosen to live our lives, but you've given me like structure to it. There's a system, like step one, step two, step three, whatever. And I'm like, oh, it makes so much sense. It was very logical to me. And so she had gone to the life coach school and I was like, okay, well, I'll go to the life coach school. And I had no intention of becoming a life coach. I wasn't really interested in starting another business and things like that. And so it wasn't until I was doing some, I had a goal to do like 100 free coaching sessions. And in that process, I decided, I kind of like this and I think I'm pretty good at it. So let's go for it. So that was my journey to it. I felt like it was things clicking into place.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear that a lot. And it was for sure true for me as well, that it was like right time, right place. And so many things made sense. And I find that fascinating. Well, first of all, your entire story is so fascinating to me, especially the fact that he was injured at such a young age and injured before you guys met. And so your entire relationship was like eyes wide open. We know exactly what we're getting into. Maybe not exactly, but I find that so courageous and so amazing that it was like, if we're going to enjoy this life, not just endure it, like you're saying, we have to have some tools for this. We can't just, you know, have a hard day and let it get us down, because there are going to be a lot of hard days, right? And what a gift that you gave to each other in structuring your life in such a way that this wasn't a surprise to you. Like you came across coaching and you're like, oh, actually, yeah, I know a lot of this, right? I've applied a lot of this and I know it's going to bring me joy and help me feel other things, right? That's another thing that we forget about when we're outside of coaching, right? We think happiness is the ultimate goal. It's not really, it's living life and being able to enjoy both happiness and sorrow and all the other stuff that comes along with it.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's for sure. And that is really interesting. I feel like I'm a very good griever as a widow. And so you kind of touched on this just a little bit, feeling all the things. And it's not because what people might think. People might think, oh, well, she's so strong, or she, you know, is thriving or whatever. It's like, yeah, that is true. But it's the reason why I'm a good griever is because I allow my emotions.
Because you actually grieve?
Yeah. I live the emotion. I feel it. I welcome it. It's part of the remembering for me. It's part of the love for me. And so when I have those moments where it washes over me, whether it's anger or worry or sorrow or whatever, then like I will sob hard on purpose. And it's like, bring it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm feeling it. I'm bringing it. And I have a lot of, you know, I have my own coach. I have a hypnotherapist that I use. So like I have used resources. I put resources around me to help me, you know, be the very best griever that I can be. And I think that it's such a valuable concept to allow ourselves to feel whatever it is we're feeling and not have like a timeline. Or grieving is such an interesting thing, because lots of people will say, well, I should be at a certain point, you know, like this timeline. And there is no timeline. There is no point to be at. There is no moment that you're over things or that you should be XYZ. So I just like to tell people, you know, do you need some help getting through this? Then like, get the help,
right?
If you're kind of stuck, then get the help. But like, there is no timeline.
I love that. That is so helpful. You know, I think there's two main reasons why people shy away from negative emotion in general. One is obviously it doesn't feel good, like happy, sad. I prefer happy, right? But I think the main one, and this comes up for me a lot, is worrying about what people think, like how I'm supposed to look. I'm supposed to look like, just an example in my own life, because I have a lot of kids and I homeschool, some very intentional choices that make my life a little bit different. And I would say more difficult in some ways. And so I find myself not wanting to complain or be upset when things go wrong, because I have to put on this face like I've got it all together. And I think what a disservice we do both to ourselves and others who find themselves in the same place, going, I just need to connect with somebody that gets this. And where we've got this, everything is fine, we're so great, crying behind closed doors kind of a thing. I mean, not that we have to air our dirty laundry, but to share that.
I think we air our dirty laundry. I mean, I don't know, like I think there's very healthy ways. There's very healthy ways to like tell the truth. But also, you know, I teach my clients a principle called the generous and. And so it's like, yeah, I feel like crap and it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
Both things can be true at the same time. And so this idea of I don't love the phrase venting, you know, because usually when we're venting, we're just staying in the negative and getting out, and there's no view of what could be also true, you know, about something positive, or that you are going to make it through or whatever it is. And so I'm not a huge fan of just living in that negativity at all. Both things can exist, but I think it's important for us to say, yeah, that like today is hard.
Yeah.
Today's hard and probably going to be over at some point, you know,
right.
Like whenever it is. And so
I love that concept. And that is one of my favorite tools, is the and, you know, you looking at families, for example, these laboratories, right, that are so hard and so wonderful at the same time, that what a powerful thing it is to say, this really sucks right now, and I wouldn't have it any other way. And this is what I've chosen, or, and it will get better. And I know I made the right choice, and whatever brings you the hope in that moment, even while things feel like they're going down the toilet.
Yeah, 100%. And I want to mention also with grief, in case there's somebody out there that is on the flip side of this, I found with grieving that people, instead of, well, you have times where you're like, I'm fine, I'm fine, I'm fine, and you're not expressing what the problem is. But there's also this opposite of only saying it's bad and not allowing, like I went through a time with my coach, I had to talk to her a lot about it, because it was like, well, can I feel okay? Can I feel like Coleman and I are thriving? Or is that disloyal to the memory, to the love I have for him, to whatever? And so it's an interesting thing that we can go both ways. And I think that's true with grief, with life, whatever, that whatever it is we think we're supposed to be feeling, right? Like, just notice, do I think I'm supposed to be feeling this and I'm like resisting it or whatever? And just notice that. And it's okay to feel whatever it is you're feeling.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. And there's no honor to be had in wearing misery like a badge.
Yeah. So that's kind of an interesting, like it goes both ways, right?
Yeah, for sure. A pendulum. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love that so much. Okay. So, so, so helpful. I love all this talk about just appreciating life, the highs, the lows, all of it. But I want to shift now into what you do as a coach, because I am fascinated by this. So tell us what your specialty is. Who do you help?
I help high achievers create 100% balance.
Yeah. I love it. I love it so much. I remember listening to a podcast. I just saw the title of a podcast scroll up in my app and it said the light and dark side of high achieving. And I thought, that's for me. Like to know that sometimes it is so wonderful to be productive and be somebody who likes to go and do and perform. And sometimes it is so hard. So what do you think are some of the biggest challenges for high achievers? Because I know we're talking to a lot of them here. You're trying to build a business, especially as a mom. You're probably one of those. What are some of the challenges you see?
I think that one of the biggest challenges, people would say that it's time management, like they don't have enough time, but that's not usually the problem. But it's okay. They can think that that's the problem. You know, it feels like we don't have enough time because we want to be doing all the things, or we think we're supposed to be doing all the things, and we need to do them at a high level. And so like work has to be at a certain level, and family has to be at a certain level. And, you know, everything that we're doing has to be at a certain level. And so It's like, there's not enough hours in the day to make it happen. And there's no way that I can be successful at all of them because something has to give. Something has to like lose out. If I'm successful at work, which many of my clients are very successful at work, then family has to lose out. They're not sure how to do both. And I'm kind of guessing that with your clients, it's almost the opposite. Your audience is like, yes, so successful in the family, right? And with kids that it's like, well, then the work has to lose out.
Right.
Because I'm, you know, so good at the family part and the taking care of people part. I'm guessing that.
Yeah. Totally.
And so it's this idea that we really can be successful at all of it, but it doesn't require more time on the calendar. And it also doesn't require like a time management system, because a lot of people think that like, the time management system is going to be the thing that creates the balance.
Just a better planner, a better calendar, timer.
Yeah. And so I like to say that it doesn't matter what your time management system is, what your calendar system is. It's actually really effective. Whatever it is you've got, it's very effective. What we work on is how we're thinking about our time.
Mm. So you're shifting, I'm assuming, from some sort of a scarcity mentality into we can, and how, what are some of the tactical tips you use for stepping into that?
Yeah. So we talk a lot about aligned decision-making, really figuring out what you want to have happen, what the outcome is that you want to be creating, whether it's with a relationship, with, you know, your business goals, with, oftentimes, I'll be honest, oftentimes it's a relationship, you know, like people are high achieving, but there's some relationship or multiple relationships that aren't measuring up to what they want. And they want to feel more present. They want to feel more close. They want to feel more connected. And so we figure out what do they really want to have happen and then make a plan of the best way to make that happen. And it always includes being more present.
Oh yeah. That hits like a knife to the heart.
And so like we learn how, like, what does that actually look like to be more present? And part of that is what we think we're controlling and what we feel like we have to be controlling, and loosening that definition of what we really have to control in order to create the life that we want, and the value of understanding, giving up certain control to the place that it already is anyway, but we just
acknowledging it
under the assumption that we have control over it. And I think that control is such an interesting thing because it comes into play with this idea of like helping our kids or helping our employees be more independent.
Yeah.
Yeah. And trusting themselves, we trust them, you know, to be able to handle whatever the thing is. And so that comes into play all the time.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, you're speaking my language here for sure. And I find that that's one way that motherhood has just stretched and expanded me, and I think a lot of our listeners, in just the lack, complete and utter lack of control. It's like, if I had had one or two kids, I probably would just have been a dictator my entire life, but I had enough that it finally taught me there is very little you can control here. So just step into it, allow people to try to help you, right? Allow the kids to do things, allow them to mess up, to get messy, let go, and then see what happens.
Yeah. So when you, I'm curious, when you went through that, I only have one child. I mean, we had Coleman 16 years after we were married, and he's like our miracle baby with vitro and whatever, but I never planned on 10, you know, I never planned on 10, but I'm curious, as a mom who has, you know, so many kids, what do you see as the benefits of letting go of some of that control?
Peace, happiness, like being able to even like fall asleep at night. Because there were times when I just thought, there's so much going on and so much out of my control right now, I think I'm going to completely lose my mind. Like, I can't finish the laundry and somebody's screaming, and just physically, it was impossible for me to have my hand in all the things I wanted to have my hand in. And so it was just coaching and using tools where I could sit on the couch and be like, right now, the time is to be present. Right now, the time is to read a book with my child. That is going to be a mess. And that is going to be a mess. And he's going to be screaming for a while. And that's okay. We're just going to focus on one thing at a time. And I'm still every single day learning that, but it was unexpected. That was an unexpected turn.
Yeah. And I think what happens is when we say we're giving up control, what is happening in our minds when we really are doing it? Like when you really feel present with your child or whatever task, it could be work, it could be, you know, whatever the thing is, when you feel present and engaged in that, like what is happening in your mind and your body?
Well, I can definitely focus better, right? Instead of trying to control all the things, feel more fulfilled. It just feels a lot better. I don't know. I don't have the words for it.
You feel like it's more calm. Do you feel like more calm, more connected?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, even though it's not necessarily calm, right? Things could still be happening and screaming, whatever. I am able to almost, I don't want to say compartmentalize, but almost segment things like, yeah, that's okay. That's going to be a mess right now. That's okay. That's going to be losing control right now. The focus is this thing right here.
Yeah. And so that's the magic right there, because you're creating the calm within. No matter what's happening outside of you, you're creating the calm within.
Yeah.
And allowing yourself to not be distracted by like, oh, I'm thinking about the to-do list. I'm thinking about, you know, I've got to do this next. I've got to do that next. I've got to do that next. Yeah. Instead of, you know, just like spending a few minutes with the child, reading the book or listening or looking in their eyes or whatever it is. That's what being present is.
Yeah.
It has very little to do with physical presence.
Right.
And everything to do with what is happening inside our minds and in our bodies. And so that's what I help my clients understand and learn how to use. And so then what happens is the chaos is around. The chaos doesn't usually change.
Right.
Everything that changes is what's happening inside of us. And that's us learning how to manage our minds and our bodies so that we can be present. We can have the experience that we want to be having in life, no matter what is happening around us.
Yeah. Right. And to go back to what you were saying before, like the way we can give independence to those around us, children, employees, anyone that we manage or lead, what does that look like tactically? Like, okay, I've got a kid that really wants to learn how to do something and I'm going crazy because he's making such a mess. Or I have a employee I have to train and they just can't get this thing right. How do I manage my own mind so that I'm not going crazy while they're not doing things, quote unquote, the right way?
Right. The right way, the fast way.
Right. The efficient way. I know how to do it.
Yeah. Like you're better at it. Of course you're better at it. Right. No one can do it as well as you can. Like sometimes we feel guilty because it's like, oh, I can. And so I should do it. Right. And so we kind of feel guilty that we're not doing it. So there's a lot of, first we have to identify like, okay, that's getting in my way and I'm going to let it not get in my way anymore. I'm going to allow myself to allow them to be independent. Do you see what I mean? Like it's a decision. It's a decision yeah. to let the people around us be independent because we value that.
Mm-hmm.
We value their independence.
Yeah.
And so if we don't value another person's independence, then it's going to be a little bit of a harder road to make mm-hmm. it happen. So first, let's try to get in the space that we value them being able to do it. And the way that we can start to value somebody else doing is we can start to think, okay, well, what are the good things about them being independent? Mm-hmm. Like, I know it takes more time now, but it'll be more efficient later.
Yeah.
If they learn how to do this and they learn how to help me with this or whatever, I know that it's really messy now, but he's going to get better at this.
Mm-hmm.
It won't make such a mess later. And he'll learn how to learn new things, you know, in the future. And so it will be worth it. And I value the end result
mm-hmm.
more than my ability to get the job done right now.
Yeah. Well, and what an important shift, right? What you did was you took it from me needing things to be clean and efficient and quick to valuing someone's independence and their agency. It goes from selfish to how am I being a leader, right? Because the control freak is the one that does all the things. That's not a leader. A leader is able to take their hands off the wheel and say, here, you try and let me do my best to patiently watch and lead and guide while you do things clumsily and wrong. You know, as we speak, my 8-year-old is making cupcakes. It's going to be like a bomb went off when I come out of my office and I'm like breathing through it. It's going to be okay. but that's the shift. I see it as it's not about me. It's about leading and guiding another human being.
And I value that. Like that is important yeah. to me. It is important to me that it's important to me that your 8-year-old learns how to bake something in the kitchen. Like, it's important to me. And so I'm sure it's very important to you.
Yeah.
That your 8-year-old learns how to do something in the kitchen. Right. And the only way that they're going to learn how to do that is by learning how to do it, experiencing it. Mm-hmm. And so when we move it into like, no, I actually value this. This is important to me to create for my child or for my employee, because I want this kind of a business. I want this kind of experience at work where we're supportive and we have a team and I'm not doing everything, but other people can shine and they can grow and they can become experts at something. Mm-hmm. Like once we step into valuing that, it becomes a lot easier to take our hands off that wheel the way that maybe we're thinking we need to. And so I actually was thinking about this. I have a couple of things about my son, but I want to say first, this week, my son had lacrosse tryouts. All right. For the high school, he's only a freshman, but because they don't have a junior high program, then he gets to be at the high school. So the coach, he made a certain team, but he wants the next level up. So he started talking to the coach, like texting the coach or whatever, like, what can I do to like get on this next level team? And I'm so impressed by what this coach told him, because he said, hey, listen, I want you to be an X-man. So that is the person behind the net. If anybody knows lacrosse, that is the one that's going to score, but he's behind the other team's net. And then he would like come around kind of closely to the net and has like a couple of different moves that the coach wants him to learn how to do to make a shot a specific way from behind the net. And the coach told him, if you learn how to do these things and you show me that you're competent at it, then you can make this team, this next level team. And I was like, wow, what just happened with that coach and that direction? Because usually someone would say, hey, just work harder.
Yeah.
Just keep trying and you'll get there. Right. But then he has no idea how to do it. And I'm watching my child get this kind of direction from his coach, like specific, clear direction. And he says, yeah, like Coleman says, can I stay after practice and work with you so you can show me what to do? Yes. So he stays a half hour after. Then the coach tells him, hey, why don't you look at these different college games and you'll see what I'm talking about with this move. So he's sitting there, you know, at 10 o'clock at night watching the final game from last year's NCAA tournament, saying to me, oh my gosh, they do this all the time. You know, he's watching somebody do really well the thing that he's been asked to do. And I'm just finding it so fascinating when the coach has chosen to give him something specific to move forward with, how quickly he's moving forward. And I know without a doubt that my 15-year-old is going to become an expert at that shot.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know. And so I'm watching this opportunity for him to become independent at something, and the confidence that goes, like, he is thinking he is like number one, and he does not know how to do the thing yet. Yeah. You know what I mean? And yeah. He thinks he's number one, and that's what's going to create his ability to be number one at this.
Right.
And to increase the skill. And so I think it's really fascinating, because oftentimes we think that when we do it for them, it's faster, it's more efficient, it's whatever. But like, what are we not allowing them to grow in because we are doing it for them? It's playing out before my very eyes.
Yeah. Teenagers will do that to you.
And it's fascinating. And so I'm just really grateful for a coach who sees his opportunity to guide a kid into something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's all that we're talking about here. We're just guiding an employee, or we're guiding a child or whatever into something greater mm-hmm. than what they already are.
Yeah.
And it's such a valuable, incredible experience to watch. But while we're doing it, it might feel kind of uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Because yeah. I had this, I kind of told you this when we were meeting before, the same, you know, Coleman. he was in a play, like a musical, and he decided he wanted to wear his contacts instead of his glasses. He's always worn his glasses, hasn't been wearing his contacts, and he wants to wear his contacts. So every morning before school, I was having to put the contacts in because, like, we're late. I'm faster at it. I can make it happen really quick. You know, we got to get to school on time, whatever. And then you combine that with, there's a weird, okay, it's not weird. I'm not going to say weird. It's a hairstyle at the junior high that his hair does not go the way that it, the hairstyle is. And so it requires like a flat iron to kind of like do just a little bit
what
on
a nice mom.
To do a little on the front. And so I've been doing this flat iron thing, you know, to help him. And now the contacts are happening. So both things were happening before school. And finally, I realized, like, what am I doing? What am I doing with this? And I realized, okay, I'm believing that he can't do it. I'm thinking that I'm the only one that can do it this fast, this well, you know, whatever. And what if I don't think that anymore? What if I don't think that anymore? Like, what will happen if I help him be independent in this situation? So I told him, okay, this is the last time I'm doing the hair. This is the last time I'm doing the contacts. Just so you know, wake up enough time to make it happen. All right. So next morning, what happens? He's doing his contacts. It takes forever. He's like, Mom, can you just help me? I'm like, I can't, but I totally believe that you can do it. Okay. So that's what I was saying out of my mouth, right? But that is not what I was feeling inside my body.
Dying inside.
Not what I was feeling inside my body. And so this is where I think it's really important for us to remember, like, it's not just necessarily like this easy peasy. Oh yeah. You just go do it. And it's amazing. Go be independent. No, like, it required management. Mm-hmm. On my part. So mm-hmm. I'm sitting there, I'm watching him, and I'm going through in my head, like, don't say it, don't say it, don't say it, don't say it. Like, I'm telling myself, like, don't step in, don't do it. He can do this. Remember, this is the line you've drawn. Like, I am convincing myself, reconvincing myself why I want him to learn how to do this. And if I step in, then I'm reinforcing the opposite thing.
Yes.
And there was a point where I even had to walk away.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, okay. And I walk into the bathroom, you know, and I'm like, I know you can do it. And I walk out.
Mm-hmm.
All of that is happening within me. And I think that might be the part that when we're trying to help our employees or help our children be more independent, we forget that part.
Yeah.
That, like, we have to manage ourselves.
Right.
In order to carry it out. Well, guess what? Just so you know, this morning and for the last week, he's done his hair and he's done his contacts.
Yay.
Right? Like, he can do it. He can do it, but it required me not stepping in.
Yeah.
And so I had, like, it was a process. So if any of you out there listening is like, man, this is hard. I just want to do it. Or we're going to be late for school or whatever. It's like, it's okay.
Right.
This is important. This is what I want. This is going to be good for him.
And you know what I see happen in a situation like you're describing here is all you wanted to do was to step in from pure motives, because you wanted to be this helping, loving, wonderful mom. And also because you wanted him to not be late for school. But you're stepping in, like you're saying, just reinforces, you're not quite ready, son, right? The opposite of what we're trying to do with our teens, which is enable and empower and let them try out life. Even if it's messy and they fall and they stumble and they're late for school, because you have faith in him, because you believe in him, right? We think that we're coming in to save and rescue, and it's this wonderful thing, but eventually it becomes a hindrance to them. And if we want to raise independent children, we have to learn to let go. You know, I see this a lot in when I coach moms whose kids are becoming teenagers. It's a really tough shift because you go from being your child's everything in the world. They need you for everything. And it's a very empowering feeling, right? You're like, well, I run everything. I rule everything. They can't survive without me. And then little by little, they need you less and less. And there's a lot of work to be done for mom. It doesn't make you less valuable. It doesn't mean that your life is over. This is what we've been working for, is to have an independent child. But gosh, it requires mind management.
Yeah. And so it's like a different work. I think that's kind of fascinating. And maybe to reframe it, instead of like, oh, they don't need me anymore. No, they need me in a different way. They need me to be a mentor. They don't need me to be the doer of all the things. They need me to be a mentor. And so now I'm going to figure out what that looks like. I'm going to figure out how to do that, because I'm not exactly sure how. And so that's like our own learning and growth that can happen, instead of thinking, oh no, they don't need me. It's like, oh yeah, they totally need me, but it's just in a different role than what I'm used to. And so I'm going to figure out how to do that role.
Yeah, that is a really great way to put it. And it just requires a little bit of a shift. When you were talking about being a guide, you know, in business leadership books, we're often taught to not be the bottleneck in our business, right? Don't have every decision go through you, because it slows everything down, right? You have to delegate so that other people can have some of that responsibility. And I see us doing that in our families as well sometimes, where we're not the gatekeeper, we're the guide, right? There's a difference between everything passes through me, I have to approve everything, I have to decide everything, versus let me show you how and give you some independence to do it. And that guide is a really fun role. I'm really loving it now, but at first it's a little bit tricky.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, for sure. What do you feel like are the barriers that people, they can't step into the guide role because of what? What do you think?
I think it's a couple of things we've talked about before, not wanting to relinquish it, right? Wanting to be, to keep that role that you've been so comfortable with for so long. Another one is fear. There's a lot of fear that our kids or our assistant or somebody is going to mess something up irreparably, especially our kids. Oh my gosh, they're going to go out and destroy their lives because I wasn't watching careful enough, right? You know, because in the early years, it is our responsibility to make sure our 2 and 3 and 4 year olds are safe and not making decisions that will ruin their life. But 15, 16, 17 year old, way less so. Right now they're getting in a car and they're driving away from us and they're making decisions that really can impact them forever. That's terrifying. I see a lot of fear come up around that.
Okay. So what would be the way to combat that fear? Because in my mind, the way that I do it is, again, I look at the value of not being fearful of it, of them doing the thing. So, you know, Coleman is learning how to drive right now. He's got his learner's permit. So I'm sitting in the passenger seat, whatever. And in my head, I know that it's really important for him to be able to learn how to drive. And it's going to be really important for him to go off and drive himself different places. And so, all right, let's do this. And I'm going to manage my own fear that something will happen to him, you know, and say, yeah, you're right. Something could happen. Something could happen to him, because like we live in a world where things happen.
Right.
And it's also going to be okay. He also is learning how to work through things. He also is learning how to problem solve. And so whatever happens, we can do this. He can do this. I have to protect him from anything bad happening. Right?
Yeah.
Like we want them to be problem solvers. And so there has to be some trust that like, yes, we can handle, he can handle, she can handle.
Right.
If something goes wrong.
Yeah. The analogy I love to use is, you know, when your baby is learning to walk, none of us would ever consider holding that baby for the rest of their life, right? We let them stumble. We let them get the bruise that's always on their face for a year, right? Because they're always tripping and falling. And yet with some of those bigger decisions, weighing that balance between the fear and the value that we have of them being independent is harder. Or for some of us, it, certain ones are harder than others, right? The walking thing is like, I think sometimes a silly example, because none of us would ever do that. And yet we do it later on in life. With driving, or maybe with dating, or maybe with hairstyle, or whatever it is that it's so hard for us to let go of. But I love that you just keep coming back to, my value set is such that he's going to be an independent adult. He's going to learn this thing. He's going to have the blessings and the opportunities and the freedom that I have enjoyed for so many years and have given me the rich life I have. And in order to do that, it has to look like this.
Yeah. And something else is coming up for me too. One of the things that I do a lot of, like, affirmations and speaking exactly what I want. Like, I'm very careful about what I speak out loud and what I think about. And one of the things that I come back to that's like a daily reminder on my phone that pops up every single day is I'm not doing this afraid. I'm not doing this afraid. And so I have learned that fear is actually, rather than like succumbing to fear or just being like the victim of fear, feeling afraid of something, it's just a cue in my body. Like, oh, I feel afraid. What's happening? What's happening? And I do not want to take action from fear.
Right.
That's what I've learned about myself. I don't want to take action from fear. And so if I'm feeling afraid, then it's like, okay, I don't want to say no because I'm afraid. I don't want to necessarily say yeah. Like whatever the situation is, I don't want to do it because I'm afraid. Mm-hmm. And I feel like our emotions can be cues for us, like little red flags that we can tune in and say, oh gosh, I don't usually make the best decisions when I'm feeling this certain way. And so when I feel that way, I'm going to like pause, wait to make the decision, recognize that maybe I don't want to make it right this second, and I'll come back to it when I'm not feeling this thing, or I'm going to get myself in a place where I'm not feeling this thing. And so for me, that's been really useful to just recognize that I don't have to act from fear.
Yes. Yes. Oh, we could talk all day about that too. We've had a podcast episode all about internal family systems, that parts work, right? And like the fears yelling over here, and that we can still stay in the driver's seat and acknowledge it. And like, I love what you're saying. Use it as a cue that, huh, something's going on for me here. What is this fear about? What am I afraid is going to happen? What, where is that playing in? And then continue on anyway. I love that. So great. Oh my gosh, Colette, I could talk to you all day long. Such good discussion, but we are totally out of time. So I want you to please tell our listeners where they can find you, learn more about you, glean all your wisdom, and maybe work with you if they're interested.
Sure. So my husband and I, we have a book. It's on Amazon. It's called Messy Victories. He was working on it when he passed away, and I took over the project and turned it into ours. Let's just be honest. That's what happened. And so it is our book. It's how we lived our lives, principles of success for us, and lots of stories and things like that. So Messy Victories on Amazon. And you can find me at ColetteHall.com or on Instagram on all the things Colette Hall.
Okay, that sounds amazing. We will definitely check it out. And I really want to read your book too. I'm super curious about all the stories you're telling. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Are you ready to start or grow your dream business? Click the link in the show notes to download the free starter guide to building a business or to schedule a free coaching call with me. And if you loved this episode, don't forget to leave a review and share it with a friend who might be feeling the call to burn a little brighter.